The views and opinions expressed by the guests, callers, and hosts on this and all Rents Radio Network programs do not necessarily reflect or agree with those of the network, its commercial sponsors, its radio station affiliates, or internet broadcast platforms. In these controversial times, we believe the First Amendment and freedom of the press are absolutely essential to the survival of our nation. Thank you. And now, enjoy the program.
Let me tell you, don't miss tonight's program. This is going to be a very interesting 3 hours. We're going to start it off with Dr. Henry Nyman. Hour two, Jim Mars will join us. And then hour three, Professor James Fetzer will be back. I have some things to open up for you to peruse, read, and look at rents.com, hopefully within the hour. I've been working all day on this. It's going to be a very big story. I don't want to pass final judgment on it. I'm simply going to open the door and invite you to look at it and make up your own mind. It's big. So stand by. First up tonight, Dr. Henry Nyman, the Zika virus, pretty much out of the news, been buried by the political machinations and weird aberrations going on in this country. And you'll know what I mean in hours two and three tonight. This is a very big story. Zika continues to move. It's ramped up to, in Florida, for example, 823 total cases. Locally in Florida, 87 cases. There's a lot going on. And Henry, welcome back. We don't hear much of this. Are you working on this full time? Are you working on other things as well? You're a very busy man.
No, I'm working on this fairly full-time. Things have been bouncing around a little bit as far as the activity is concerned. It's picked up a little bit recently with regard to Florida in particular. Florida is actually getting ready to explode right now. They've been, I'll go through that tonight. It turns out a month ago on the last report, that was right before there was a local transmission identified in Miami Beach. At that time, a month ago, it was just in Wynwood. Miami Beach was a much bigger deal, and it's really taken up until this week until how big a deal it is becoming more obvious. There's kind of three different areas that I wanted to cover tonight, based upon news in the last 3 days, actually. One was today, in which sequences were released, actually by Scripps Clinic, which is where I actually did my postdoc and went on staff there before I formed pharmaceutical company, and so that's kind of my old alma mater, and they just They just released five sequences today, three from mosquitoes in Miami that were Zika infected, and two from two of the recent cases that are linked to Miami Beach. And I'll go through that in just a little bit. Then yesterday, sequences were released from Singapore. There's a large Zika outbreak. In Singapore, there have been 340 cases. These are local cases,
right,
that have been identified in the last 10 days or so. And there's concern that the Zika is going to take off in Southeast Asia. And it's a slightly different version of the Zika virus. And the day before that, a paper came out in Nature Medicine that described the experimental production of microcephaly in a non-human primate using, due to Zika. Injections. And so I wanted to start with that in part because, it's kind of remarkable to me, but I don't know. There's still, some out there that really don't believe that Zika is causing microcephaly and, or, if it does, it's somehow affiliated with some cofactors that are ongoing in Brazil. And this is mostly a Brazil problem. And even though there have been microcephaly cases showing up in the United States as well as various countries that had Zika infections, there's still a fair amount of resistance to that. And part of that resistance happened, just to give a little history, a paper came out in the New England Journal of Medicine, and it really gave a summary of what was going on in Colombia. And Colombia was important because they had a fairly large outbreak of Zika there, and it trailed the outbreak in Brazil by about 6 months or so. And with all the microcephaly cases showing up in Brazil, Colombia was used as an example and said, Colombia's got all these Zika cases, and they don't have any microcephaly. So, it isn't related to the Zika virus. It's related to something happening in Brazil that happened to be in the same location as the Zika virus. And discuss these things, a little bit on your show with regard to GMO mosquitoes being released in Brazil or larvicide being sprayed or in the water. And so those factors were cited as, that's the true cause of the birth defects, and it really had nothing to do with the Zika virus. The Zika virus just happened to be in the area at the same time, but it was these other agents that either exclusively were causing the birth defects or potentially in combination of with the virus, but you need these, the altered mosquitoes, or you needed the virucide to get the microcephaly. And the example of Colombia was that they've got Zika and they don't have microcephaly. And the problem with that argument is it's just a time situation where the microcephaly is generally associated with Zika infection in the first trimester. And so there was a 6 month delay between the time when Zika appeared in Brazil in the spring of 2015 until the microcephaly started to appear in the fall of 2015. And since Zika started in the fall of 2015 in Colombia, you wouldn't really see microcephaly cases until the spring of 2016. And so in the interim, there would be women that were infected with Zika in their second or third trimester who would give birth to babies who wouldn't have the microcephaly. And that was the argument that was being used. It was, they've got Zika in Colombia, they've got babies that are being born from women, their mothers that were infected with Zika. They don't have the microcephaly, so it's a is a problem with Brazil. It really has nothing to do with Zika. And this paper came out in the New England Journal of Medicine to kind of summarize the situation in Colombia. And unfortunately, they stopped the study in March of 2016, right about the time that the microcephaly was going to begin. And they basically, I mean, the conclusion of the paper was this was a preliminary study, and Zika was not causing microcephaly in women infected in the second and third trimester, because the women infected at those two stages of the pregnancy had given birth and the babies didn't have microcephaly. And they said in the paper there it was, you know, a little bit too early to tell what happened the first trimester because those babies hadn't been born yet. And you know, the fact that it was, I mean, preliminary was in the title of the paper, but that was kind of seized upon that, well, look at you, you have all these women that gave birth and they didn't mention that they gave birth after being infected in the second mm-hmm. and third trimester mm-hmm. and they have microcephaly. And on research group went and published another paper that used the Journal of Medicine, New England Journal of Medicine results, to make an argument that it was really the virus site that was causing the problem in Brazil, and that's why there were microcephaly cases in Brazil, mm-hmm. and any cases in Venezuela were just due to a coincidence that invariably a couple women would get microcephaly and a few of them would happen to be infected with Zika. And you see a couple that were linked to Zika, but it really wasn't due to the Zika infection. And then as things kind of moved along, it became apparent that argument really didn't hold water because the background in Colombia for microcephaly was about 2 cases a week or 3 cases a week. And shortly after that, right on schedule in the spring, the baby started to be born with microcephaly, and the number went up. And it got as high as 60 cases a week, and now it's down to around 20 cases a week. But
that's a pretty big drop.
It's been well above the 3-case background, uh-huh. and it's been pretty apparent from Colombia. But because this paper came out, another paper just came out that cited the same data, and they went back to the New England Journal of Medicine paper, and then backed it up with this second paper about the virucides, and they kind of reignited the argument that Zika doesn't cause microcephaly. You look at New England Journal of Medicine said they didn't have it. These guys said it was the virucide. Well, this concern about Zika is unwarranted. It really has nothing to do with microcephaly. So, any event, a group in Washington decided to actually test the ability of the virus to cause microcephaly in a non-human primate. And they had the odds kind of stacked against them that when they started this experiment, they really only had one monkey that was pregnant at the time. And she was the equivalent of 28 weeks pregnant. And they didn't really have the Zika virus that was circulating in the Americas, because at the time, most of the virus was still in Brazil, and the researchers in Brazil were kind of stingy as far as giving the virus out. So they ended up using another Zika. It's still the Asian lineage, but it was a virus that was circulating in Southeast Asia, and actually this was isolated in 2010 in Cambodia. So they used this Asian version of Zika, and they ended up taking the mother and giving her 4 injections in her forearm at levels that would mimic a mosquito bite. So there's quite a range as to how much Zika virus is in a mosquito bite. It ranged from 200 to to 10 million. And they chose the 10 million because basically they only had one subject. And, you know, they didn't want to use too low of a dose and end up with no results. So they did do those four injections. And within 10 days, they could see changes in the brain of the 28-week-old.
Do we know what it is in the virus that causes the brain to become malformed? What is the mechanism? Does anybody know yet?
It's the cells.
I know that, but that's kind of oversimplification thing. There's still some reason that that particular virus goes after cerebral tissues and destroys developing cells. What is it about that virus that likes the brain? That's my question. Do we know?
Well, the virus is always like the brain. I mean, the virus.
Oh, it sounds like a new Hollywood screenplay. The viruses always go for the brain.
Yeah, well, this particular virus, the Zika virus was, you know, just to give a little history, the Zika virus was identified in 1947 in Uganda in the Zika forest. That's how it got its name.
Right.
And in 1952, one of the first experiments that was done was to take the virus and infect mice and then see what happened. And they infected mice in 1952, and they did an autopsy on the, you know, euthanized the mice, did an autopsy, and then looked at all the organs, and there was Zika in the brain. So they knew back in 1952 that the Zika virus was neurotropic, that the virus does grow well. I mean, viruses to get into a cell need to have a receptor, and the Zika virus happened to work well with the receptors that are a subset of brain cells, and therefore it you know, a virus is kind of a parasite. The virus has you know, the Zika virus has 10,282 nucleotides to encode one long protein that's chopped up into a bunch of other proteins, and that's all its genetic information, you know, just 10,000, a little over 10,000 letters, you know, and so it's, it needs to get into a cell to make a new virus that basically it's got its own genetic information. It can copy its genetic information, but to turn the genetic information into proteins to make a new virus and pop out, it has to use the machinery of the cell. And to use the machinery of the cell, it has to get into the cell. And to get into the cell, there has to be a receptor on the surface of the cell that it binds to. And Zika virus binds to receptors on the surface of progenitor neurons. So that's how they live. You know, to make a new virus, Zika virus, it's got to get into a brain and replicate there. It does very well in brains, and that's what it targets. So in this case, so there have been various in vitro experiments that show indeed that that it does have a tropism or a likeness for certain neurological cell types, and that's exactly what they saw with the in the experimental model. Just that within 10 days, they could see the fetus's brain start to change. The growth of the brain started to slow. They were monitoring it with MRI, so they basically would take sequential readings on that, and they could see the brain begin to slow. They could see that the white matter in the brain was actually being targeted. And then at 38 weeks, they euthanized the mother and the fetus and did an autopsy. And indeed, they found the virus in the brain. Actually, in this pigtail macaque, there was also some virus in the spleen of the newborn. And they saw the same thing in the mother. They could actually find the virus in the spleen of the mother as well as the mother's brain. But the level was higher in the fetus than it was in the mother. And And they basically published this paper 3 days ago in Nature Medicine. And so they fulfilled Cox postulates. And you know, there's a series of steps that an experimental, you know, neurological agent has to
meet. There's three, aren't there three Cox postulates, conditions that have to be met?
Right. It has to kind of, you know, use an experimental animal. It's got to produce a similar type of disease.
Uh-huh.
And that's what the bottom line is. Is that you basically can reproduce that disease in a healthy animal and essentially put the virus in and get the outcome. And so that's essentially what they did. And so they demonstrated that using the virus, in this case it was the Asian strain from Cambodia, that they could inject a mother's forearm. The mother actually was asymptomatic, so the even though they could find the virus in the mother at autopsy, the mother didn't exhibit any symptoms. So she didn't have a fever and didn't act like she had been infected with the virus and had developed symptoms. She was asymptomatic, but they could see the effect on the brain start to show up 10 days after the injection into the mother. And then followed the baby prior to, you know, through 38 weeks and see the growth of the brain slow and the targeting of the white matter and the detection of the virus. So that pretty much ruled out these auxiliary factors that are supposedly in play in Brazil, and so that indeed the Zika virus does cause microcephaly, and they can do it in a Koch's postulates were were demonstrated. And so that came out a couple of days ago, and actually another group had tried it from California. They had used a different species. It was a monkey. It was a rhesus macaque, and they had used a somewhat lower level of the virus. They had taken kind of the number in between there. They were using, instead of 10 million, they were using 10,000, and they, I think, did three or four different pregnant females, and they did, you know, they could find the virus for a short period of time in the mother, but they did not see the virus transmit to the baby. So one other group had tried it with a lower level of virus. It wasn't able to prove it, but this group did. So that was kind of a hallmark, you know, proving that indeed the virus did cause microcephaly. Anybody who was really paying attention knew this long, long ago, and that's part of the reason.
Hold on, Henry.
Put out the fake. Okay.
We'll be right back, bringing you all up to date on Zika virus, how it works, and we'll find out from Henry where it's going next. Okay, and back with Henry. It's coming up on flu season. I don't know what that will do or not do with Zika, because Zika is transmitted by mosquito. It's not human to human. Or is that beginning to show signs of potential change, Henry?
Well, now Zika is still, the change is that it can be sexually transmitted. So if you have enough human cases, then you can have some spread locally via sexual transmission. The issue with flu season is it'll mask the Zika. The Zika issue is really a testing issue, and you know, 80% of people infected with Zika are asymptomatic, and so a lot of the Zika is going to fly under the radar, even if you're looking fairly hard for it.
Mm-hmm.
In the summer, it's easier to identify it because some of these are flu-like symptoms. You're kind of achy, conjunctivitis. Flu can cause conjunctivitis also. So that's another symptom that it has in common. And the achiness is kind of like flu type of an achy. But in the summer, it's easier to identify the Zika because there isn't flu. So the flu season would kind of mask the Zika. Although in the United States, it's not that big of a deal because, you know, as you mentioned, it's transmitted by mosquitoes, and mosquitoes go away in the for most of the country in the fall and the winter. And so there's very little Zika that's going to be transmitted locally by the mosquitoes during flu season. And so even though the symptoms are similar, the two diseases don't overlap. There's some areas like southern Florida which may continue having Zika year-round because they do have mosquitoes year-round. But the levels do go down. That was part of the issue with the Olympics, that, you know, there was concern that there were going to be all of these cases due to the Olympics in Brazil, and that whole effort was fairly misguided, mostly because the summer, you know, August in Brazil is actually the dead of winter in Brazil, and that's the month that is the coolest and the driest, and
right.
Both of those don't really do much for mosquitoes, and as a result, WHO put out a statement that as far as they could tell, the number of Zika cases in people that had gone down to the Olympics and returned home was zero. They had no evidence that anybody got infected with Zika during the Olympics and brought the virus back to their native country. And so that the whole issue of postponing or moving the Olympics because it was in Brazil and Zika overlooked the fact that Brazil's in the southern hemisphere, and August in Brazil is winter, not summer. And as far as moving the virus around, like in the United States, for example, that in Zika-infected countries, I think there's 40 million people that arrive yearly in the U.S. from those countries. And so the number of people that were going to arrive from you know, attending the Olympics was a small percentage of the total. And the Olympics were held in a country that does have Zika, but not in August. So it is pretty seasonal. Now is the season, and I wanted to kind of run through a couple examples of that.
Sure.
One of which was in Singapore. The Singapore all of a sudden got this outbreak of Zika, and started, I guess, about 2 weeks ago now, and they realized fairly quickly that they had not been testing for the virus, and that the virus was now locally spreading in Singapore and was quite widespread. And so every day, you know, it started out with 20, 30 cases a day, and then it's around 10 to 20 cases a day. But, you know, the new cases were announced every day, and I think they're up to 7 defined clusters now. They've got kind of half of the city of Singapore is now, you know, covered by these 7 clusters. And the virus took off, and, you know, they're included among those that are infected. I think the number's up to 341 now confirmed cases. I think there are 8 pregnant women that are among those. And so there were some concerns that this was the virus had changed again, and you know, it was spreading really, really quickly. And then media reports came out and said that the the virus was Zika, but it was the Asian lineage, but it wasn't the lineage that had been in the Americas spreading so rapidly. And said it was the lineage that had been in Asia. Just as a quick reminder, the Zika was identified in Africa in 1947, and that was called the African strain. And mm-hmm. then it was identified in Malaysia in 1966, and if you compare the sequences, they were distinct, fairly easy to distinguish. And that was the Asian strain, and then the Asian strain gave rise to various subclades, including the one that ended up coming to the Americas. But the virus that was in Singapore was really the version that was more like the Malaysian one from 1966, although, it's changed quite a bit in the ensuing 50 years or so. And those sequences were actually just released yesterday. So yesterday, the sequence from Singapore was released. It indeed was the Asian strain, and it indeed was distinct from the virus in the Americas. And it indicates that now both of those are circulating in Southeast Asia. So there's the version that's been there for a while, but it's kind of has a resurgence and had this major spread in Singapore, and then the version that's in the Americas has shown up. So adjacent countries like Malaysia have local mosquitoes infected with both viruses, which is of interest to me, because that gives the opportunity for the two different lineages to end up in the same mosquito or the same human and recombine and evolve that way. And so I'll be paying close attention to the sequences that are coming out of Southeast Asia. But that again was an example of perception, that there's the perception was that there's something different, because all of a sudden the virus is taking off in Singapore. And the reality is that the rate that is being reported in Singapore is very high. But as it turns out, that rate probably isn't a whole lot higher than it is in Florida. The only difference is that Florida is limiting testing and reporting and trying to keep the numbers down, because they've have two areas that they designate as active transmission. And just to bring the listeners up to date a little bit, a month ago there was one area that was in Wynwood. It's a little bit north of downtown Miami. And then literally the day after the last update, which was Friday on the 19th, they announced that they had a new outbreak in Miami Beach. And that was significant, because Miami Beach is really the top tourist draw, and has a much higher density of hotels and tourists and income, actually. And so that was a serious threat to the tourist industry, and also a serious threat to the spread of the virus. And it was interesting, because when they announced it, they actually said that they didn't announce it with two cases like they did with Wynwood. So they had a cluster of two, and it turned out it was two clusters of clusters. Those were two workplaces that were 150 feet apart, and one of them had 30 employees, and 14 of which were symptomatic, indicating that probably all 30 of those employees had been infected.
So that means they were all bitten by infected mosquitoes, right? It has to.
Correct. And that's what the designation of local transmission is. So prior to Wynwood, there had been no proven cases of mosquito transmission in the United States. There had been in Puerto Rico, but not in the United States. And so Wynwood was the first example of local transmission. And that really was a little bit before this Miami Beach outbreak. So Miami Beach was really the second example of local transmission. And prior to them announcing those cases in Miami Beach, it was clear that Florida was already exporting the virus, that there was a case that was announced in El Paso, Texas.
Exporting the virus, in other words, human cases of infection that are leaving the state?
Exactly.
Okay.
So this was a resident of El Paso where they had no Zika cases. He went on vacation in Miami. The day he returned to Texas, he had symptoms. They tested him. He was positive for Zika. Hmm. And based on the epidemiology, where he didn't have any symptoms until, you know, the day he arrived in Texas, and there's an incubation period. So, you know, the question is, you know, where were you today? It was, where were you 2 or 3 days ago?
Yeah.
Two or three days ago, it was in Miami. And then a person on a business trip who was in Taipei City in Taiwan, same thing happened. She went to Miami on a business trip. The day she returned to Taiwan, she developed symptoms. They tested her. She was Zika positive. And she had also been in Miami. And so both of these were announced earlier in the week. And then the day after the last update on your show, Miami announced that indeed there was active transmission in Miami Beach, and that they actually had five cases. They had the case from El Paso, they had the case from Taiwan, they had a case from New York, and they had two local residents, all of which were in South Beach, and all of which were Zika confirmed. And so that raised some red flags, because there was more density and more tourist trade, traffic, I should say, and had the potential for, you know, fairly dramatic spread. And the local cases started to kind of creep up slowly, and then they were fairly transparent as far as listing these cases. So they had an active investigations page, and it was a little bit tricky that, you know, they had other local cases. So these are people that did not, had not traveled outside of Florida, had developed symptoms, and were positive for Zika. But they didn't call them active transmission until they had a second case. And so, you know, the argument was, well, here's the person, they got infected in Florida, they probably got infected in the city that they live, or if they, you know, went out of the city to work somewhere, you know, they might have got infected at work. But since they just had the one case, they didn't know if they got infected at home, they didn't know if they got infected at work, they didn't know if they went to a restaurant somewhere. And so they would classify them as local cases, and local cases under active investigation, and you know, testing people, contacts, including, you know, other people in the neighborhood. But until they found a second case, it would be just classified as a local case, but not active transmission. And so they really only had two areas of active transmission, Wynwood and Miami Beach, but these local cases kept on showing up, and they would put them on this active investigation page. And now the active investigation page was fairly detailed. They would list how many samples they had collected, and then they would list the status of those, you know, whether they were positive, negative, or pending. And back on the 23rd of August, they had four cases that were pending in Wynwood. And then they announced that those four cases were confirmed and they were positive. And then the caveat was, but these weren't recent cases. Now for Wynwood, you know, CDC issued a travel warning, and you know, it's really hurting business, and they've got to go, I think, 45 days without a case. And so they're trying to get this 45 days without a case, so they pulled down the travel warning. And so they were careful to note that these four cases were not recent cases. These were cases who were symptomatic back in July, and they had tested them locally for there's two different kind of tests, one's for the virus and one's for the antibody. Mm-hmm. If the virus, they can only pick up for a week in serum or 2 weeks in urine after symptoms. And therefore, if they identify people that, you know, were symptomatic 2-3 weeks ago, they really, the only way they're going to be able to prove that they're infected with Zika is to do an antibody test. And there's two different antibody tests. One's a local one, which just sees whether they've got antibodies that bind to the virus. And then if they get that as a positive, and then they send the sample to the CDC that does a more detailed test which uses live virus as a neutralization test to show that the antibodies are directed against Zika, and they're not just cross-reacting to some other infection like dengue or chikungunya,
another question. Does Zika show any indications it's going to mutate and go in a different direction and do anything other than what it is known to do already? I still don't quite understand how it came out of the mists of time to make such a statement as it has. It's a little bit hard for people to follow. It's been around since 47, and all of a sudden, boom, here it is.
Right. Well, again, it really comes down to reporting, and it comes down to critical mass. It was in 47, and like I say, the first Asian strain was in 1966. So between 47 and 66, you know, the only known cases were in Africa, and cases in Africa, human cases in particular, were not being actively investigated. So there was very little research that was done on the virus, and it wasn't until it really got to the South Pacific, and it was in Micronesia on Yap Island, and it caused a modest number of human cases, but that was one of the largest outbreaks of in humans, and that was in 2007. And so between 1947 and 2007, it was kind of in Africa. If it caused human cases, nobody was really investigating. You know, like I said, for microcephaly, which is, you know, some type of, you know, it's something that's kind of obvious, there's a 6-month delay, so that, you know, people, when they first see the virus, nothing really happens until 6 months after the outbreak, because women affected in the second or third trimester don't develop microcephaly. 80% of the cases are asymptomatic anyway. And so they don't know it's there. So it really was under the radar until it got into a population that, A, it could infect a lot of people, and B, somebody was paying attention. And in fact, even in French Polynesia, which was the big outbreak in 2013, which is, you know, not that long ago, and it, I think, affected 75% of the population. There were no reports of microcephaly at the time, but after it showed up in Brazil and there were the microcephaly cases, they went back and did find microcephaly in French Polynesia. So even when it was a fairly major outbreak, if people weren't looking for microcephaly, because you can't have microcephaly with some other viruses and some environmental nutritional type of effects or alcohol. And there's different ways that you can cause microcephaly in a fetus.
And
anything to do with Zika.
Give me one example. What else can cause microcephaly?
There's a, it's called, I forgot what the acronym is, but the measles virus can cause German measles. It could cause microcephaly. You know, that's been eliminated due to the vaccination. But I think herpes virus, in certain instances, can cause microcephaly.
All right, all right.
There's a few different viruses that can do it, but they're relatively rare. Fetal alcohol syndrome, you know, mothers drinking alcohol can cause microcephaly. So, I mean, there's a bunch of different ways you can insult a developing fetus that affects the development of the brain that gives rise to a smaller head. With Zika, it's, you know, especially in Brazil, there were enough cases that they got enough experience looking at the MRIs to identify these changes. I mean, there's calcium deposits. So calcium deposits are there because the virus infected those cells, killed off those cells, and literally made holes in the brain, and then those holes are filled in with calcium. And so when they look on an MRI, they see these white circles, and the white circles are from the salt that's sitting there because they've replaced the brain cell, you know, the holes in the brain cell. The salt. And so with an MRI, now they can identify these changes that are due to viral infection, in this case, due to Zika infection. And so it took a while for it to get out and for the microcephaly to appear. And even in Brazil, as I said, the outbreak in Brazil really began in the spring of 2015. And microcephaly wasn't identified till the fall of 2015 because it really wasn't causing microcephaly in women infected in the second and third trimester. So there's the six-month delay. So it was really getting to the Americas and getting to a high number of people, especially in a concentrated area, that led to the identification of the microcephaly. So it wasn't that the first microcephaly cases were in 2015. There were cases in French Polynesia in 2013, and there were the other cases. I mean, there is microcephaly in Africa. Nobody really looked for the Zika virus, and so you know, a lot of these things probably just went undiscovered. The healthcare isn't that good. I mean, there's plenty of microcephaly in Haiti. Mm-hmm. I mean, the sequences said that it was probably in Haiti before it was in Brazil. And Haiti was saying they've got no microcephaly cases when they started showing up in Florida. Somebody, or I think it was New York, or I'm sorry, New Jersey. Right. Anyway, it was in the United States, and this was a person from Haiti who delivered in the United States. The baby had microcephaly, and at the time of the delivery in the United States, Haiti had said they had zero microcephaly cases. Now I think they're up to 13.
We're over the time here. Yeah, wrap it up and real quick.
The wrap it up was today. The sequences were released from mosquitoes. You know, I didn't get to it, but mosquitoes were identified in Florida that had Zika. So the Zika virus came from three batches of mosquitoes, as well as two cases. They showed that there were actually two different introductions into Miami Beach. And these two cases are virtually identical. One of the cases actually had been in Cuba before he showed up here. They had thought the person was infected in Cuba, but there was a 21-day lag. The sequence indicates he wasn't infected in Cuba. He actually came from Cuba, and he got tested because he came from Cuba. But
right,
in fact, he had gotten infected in Miami in June. So
the
virus has been in Miami for a while, and it's starting to explode. There'll be a lot more cases in the next couple of weeks.
Okay, we'll watch it. Thank you, Henry. You take care. Get some rest.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye. Okay. All right, that's hour one. We'll pause and come right back with much more. Stay right there.